Ah, yes. Shalom Aleichem to all my pure-blooded white Christian Israelite brothers and sisters out there. The show is Word for Word. I'm Pastor Steve, and this show is for Tuesday, November the 15th, 2016, and we are going to be covering the book of Judges, chapters 11 and 12. Judges is Shofetim in the Hebrew, and we're going to be talking about judge number 9 in the series, Yiftach. And chapter 11 needs some very detailed explanation, as the English translations that are out there are very misleading. They've misplaced a few words and have given the incorrect assumption that Yahweh would accept a human sacrifice, which is absolutely untrue. So let's get into chapter 11 of the book of Judges, verse 1. Yiftach the Gileadite was a mighty man of valor, and he was the son of a woman prostitute, 2181. And Gilead begot Yiftach. Verse 2. And Gilead's wife, different woman, bore him sons. And his wife's sons grew up, 1431, and they drove out, 1644, Yiftach, and said to him, "You shall not inherit in our father's house, for you are the son of another," that's 312, "woman." All of this was because Yiftach's mother was not a wife. Okay. Verse 3. So Yiftach fled from before his brothers and dwelt in the land of Tob, 2897, and Worthless, 7836, that's Rechem, men gathered to Yiftach and went forth with him. In other words, he assembled a band of ruffians. Verse 4. It came to pass from time, the children of Ammon made war against Israel. And it was that when the children of Ammon made war against Israel, the elders of Gilead went to summon, 3947, Yiftach from the land of Tob. Now these were the Ammonites. They were the descendants of one of Lot's daughters by Lot, by incest. They were cursed seed. Verse 6. And they said to Yiftach, "Come and be our commander," 7101, that's Katzin, "that we may fight with the children of Ammon." Verse 7. Yiftach said to the elders of Gilead, "Did you not hate me and drive me out from my father's house?" Pardon me. "On what account do you come to me now when you are in distress?" 6862. That's Sar, T-S-A-R. Verse 8. The elders of Gilead said to Yiftach, "Therefore we return to you now, that you come with us and fight the children of Ammon and be our head," 7218, "over all the inhabitants of Gilead." And 7218 literally means head, but here it means the civil and military head man. Verse 9. And Yiftach said to the elders of Gilead, "If you return me to fight the children of Ammon, and Yahweh delivers them before me, shall I be your head?" Verse 10. And the elders of Gilead said to Yiftach, Yahweh be witness between us, if we do not so according to your words. Verse 11. Then Yiftach went with the elders of Gilead, and the people made him head and commander over them. And Yiftach spoke all his words before Yahweh in Mizpah. Verse 12. Yiftach sent messengers to the king of the children of Ammon, saying, For what reason between us do you come against us to fight in our land? Verse 13. And the king of the children of Ammon answered to the messengers of Yiftach, Because Israel took away my land when they came up from Mitzrayim, from the Arnon to the Yabbok, 2999, as far as the Jordan, that's the Jordan River. Now return them peaceably. Verse 14, And Yiftach sent messengers again to the king of the children of Ammon, and said to him, Thus says Yiftach, Israel did not take away the land of Moab, nor the land of the children of Ammon. Verse 16, But when Israel came up from Mitzrayim and walked, then Israel sent messengers to the king of Edom. That's verse 17. Saying, Allow us to pass through your land, but the king of Edom would not listen. And also they sent to the king of Moab, but he would not. And Israel abode in Kadesh. Now verse 17 of chapter 11, you can reference Numbers 20, verses 14 through 21. Verse 18. Then they went through the wilderness and went around the land of Edom and the land of Moab and came from the place of the rising, 4217, of the sun, 8121, of the land of Moab and camped, 2583, on the other side of the Arnon, but did not come within the border of Moab because the Arnon was the border of Moab. And verse 18, you can reference Numbers 21:4. Okay. Verse 19. And Israel sent messengers to Sihon, 5511, king of the Amori, 567. Those are the Amorites. The king of Keshbon, 2809. And Israel said to him, Please let us pass through your land to our place. In verse 19 through 22, you can reference Numbers 21, 21 through 24. Verse 20. But Sihon did not trust Israel to pass through his territory. But Sihon gathered together all his people and camped, 2583, in Yahatz, 3096, and fought against Israel. Verse 21. And Yahweh Elohe Israel, Elohe means God of, or divine being of, and Yahweh Elohe Israel gave Sihon and all his people into the hand of Israel, and they smote them. So Israel took possession of all the land of the Amori, those are the Amorites, the inhabitants of that land. Pardon me for a second. I've had some bronchial trouble here lately, and I'm doing the best I can. Pardon me. If I have to cough every once in a while, I have to mute the mic. Verse 22. And they possessed all the territory of the Amori, from the Arnon unto Yabbok, and from the wilderness unto the Jordan. Verse 23. So now Yahweh Elohe Israel has dispossessed the Amori from before his people Israel, and should you possess it? Verse 24. Will you not possess what Chemosh? That's 3645. It's Kemosh. Eloheka gives you to possess, and Eloheka means your God, your divine being. So all whom Yahweh Eloheinu, and Eloheinu means our God, that's a possessive, plural, drives out from before us, that we will possess. Verse 25. And now, are you really better, 2895 and 2896 combined, than Balak, 1111, son of Zippor, 6834, king of Moab? He constantly strove, that's 7378, doubled for an emphatic. He constantly strove against Israel, if not constantly making war, that's 3898, doubled for an emphatic, against us. And verse 25, you can reference Numbers 22 through 24. Remember Balak, he hired Bileam to curse Israel. Didn't work out real well for him. Verse 26. While Israel dwelt in Cheshbon and her towns and in Aroer, 6177, and her towns, and in all the cities that are along the side of the Arnon, 300 years, on what account did you not recover, 5337, literally rescue, it's Hatzalitim, on what account did you not recover within that time? Verse 27, I have not sinned against you, 2398, but you do me harm, 7451, to make war against me. The judge, capital J judge, 8199, the judge Yahweh be judge this day between the children of Israel and the children of Ammon. Verse 28, but the king of Ammon did not pay heed to the words of Yiftach, which he sent him. Now here we come to some of the problems in translations. I strongly suggest at this point that you open up your Bible, whatever version that you use, and follow along in chapter 11 here, starting at verse 29, because there are some great mistranslations here that you need to be made aware of. Please, that's chapter 11, verse 29. Then the Spirit of Yahweh came upon Yiftach, and he passed through Gilead and Manasseh, and proceeded through Mizpah of Gilead, and from Mizpah of Gilead he passed on to the children of Ammon. He went out, he was going to go to war. Verse 30. And Yiftach vowed a vow to Yahweh and said, If you shall totally give the children of Ammon into my hands, and here's verse 31, and here's where one of the mistranslations is, and you can reference verse 31 in Numbers 30, verse 2. Then it shall be that whatever comes forth from the doors of my house to meet me when I return in peace from the children of Ammon shall surely be Yahweh's. It would be Yahweh's possession. It would be dedicated to Yahweh. And I will offer up, 5927, for it, please make note of the order of wording in this verse. I will offer up for it a burnt offering. He's not going to offer it up as a burnt offering. He will offer up for it a burnt offering to dedicate it to Yahweh. Remember that. Remember that word order. They have offer it up in the King James Version. That is wrong. Offer up for it. Verse 32. So Yiftach passed over to the children of Ammon to fight against them, and Yahweh gave them into his hands. Verse 33. And he smote them from Aroer until you come to Minnith, 4511, 20 cities, to Abel-Karamim, 64, that means meadow of vineyards, with a very great slaughter. Thus the children of Ammon were subdued before the children of Israel. Yahweh gave them into his hand, and he defeated them soundly. Okay. I need to flip a page here. All right. At verse 34, and Yiftach came to Mizpah to his house. And behold, his daughter came forth to meet him with tambourine, 8596, and dances. She was his only child, 3173, that is Yekida, that is the feminine verse of that. Beside her he had neither son nor daughter. All right. Now, I will explain all of this when we get into the notes. I'll give you a detailed explanation of this. Verse 35, you can reference verse 35 in Numbers 30, verse 2. And it was when he saw her that he rent, 7167, his clothes and said, alas, 162, my daughter, you have bowed me very low. And that's 3766 doubled for emphasis. And you have become my trouble, 5916. For I have opened my mouth to Yahweh, and I am not able to turn back, 7725. Bowed me low in grief, okay? That's Hakriya Hikratini. And my trouble is Beokre from Akar. And to turn back is lashub. Verse 36, and she said to him, my father, you have opened up your mouth to Yahweh. Do to me according to that which came forth from your mouth, for as much as Yahweh has taken vengeance, that's 53:60, for you from your hated enemies, from the children of Ammon. And taken vengeance is nekamoth. Verse 37, she said to her father, let this thing be done for me. Let me be 7503 for 2 months. So I walk, 1980, and descend, 3381, upon the mountains to weep, 1058. And let me be is harafe, as relax for 2 months, and descend upon the mountains to weep over 5921, my virginity 1331, I and my companions 7464. That's Wilreofe. Verse 38, and he said, go. And he sent her away, 7971, 2 months. And she walked with her companions, 7464, and wept over her virginity upon the mountains. Now that's very important. Remember this virginity business, okay? Verse 39. And it was after 2 months, she returned to her father, who did with her according to his vow which he had vowed, and she knew, 3045, no man. So it became a custom in Israel for the daughters of Israel to go from year to year to recount, 8567, of the daughter of Yiftach the Gileadite, 4 days a year. And recount is litanuth, as tell the story of. All right, now here comes the chapter notes. So pay close attention to this and keep your Bible open to these passages. The story of Yiftach's vow and what happened to his only daughter has been twisted by some very bad translations. And I will examine for you here what proper translation and a knowledge of Hebrew law and customs reveals in a verse-by-verse analysis. Verse 31. All right, the vow itself. Yiftach said what came forth from his house would be Yahweh's as dedicated and set apart for Yahweh exclusively. He then said he would offer up, as the smoke ascending, a burnt offering for it. He did not say he would sacrifice what came forth as a burnt offering. The burnt offering made what came forth holy, fit for Yahweh's service as a dedicated thing. This sort of vow is a binding vow, as shown in Numbers 30, verse 2. Okay, verse 34, the only daughter. This is the only child of Yiftach and his only hope for grandchildren. Because that's what Israelite women did back then. They bore children. That was their purpose. To multiply us as the sands of the sea. Not like the perverse feminism we have today where they don't want children. It is the duty of white women to bear children. When his daughter came forth, she was instantly destined to be a lifelong dedicated servant to Yahweh, never to marry. She was a virgin. Perfect. Unblemished. She was never to marry. If she were to marry, she would then be under first obligation to her husband, not Yahweh. So marriage was not permitted for her under the term of her father's vows. Rules of dedication are different for men and women. Verse 35, the sorrow of Yiftach. Yiftach rent his clothing and was grieved by the fact that he would never have any grandchildren. And he would also have to give over his only daughter to lifelong service to Yahweh, seeing her no more. She would not live in his house. She would be a servant at the temple and remain a virgin until the day she died. And again, you need to refer to Numbers chapter 30, verse 2, as he could not retract his vow. It was binding. He made a vow with Yahweh, if you give them over to me and I can defeat them, whatever comes from my door, I will offer up a burnt offering for it, and it shall be dedicated to you. Yahweh kept his bargain. Now Yiftach must keep his bargain. Verses 37 through 40, weeping over virginity. This was a normal, healthy young Israelite woman. She had expected to be married and bear children and a normal life. Being a righteous young Israelitess, she was a virgin and therefore pure. She was fit in her pure state to be dedicated for Yahweh's service. Her father had vowed, and since she was under her father's authority as an unmarried female, the vow was binding upon her. She would now never marry and would remain in her virgin state. This was a major thing, affecting her entire life. She was never going to be married, never going to have kids. That's a big blow for a woman then, because their goal was to find a good husband and have plenty of kids. Plenty of children. That was what Israelite women did back then, because they knew what a woman's duty was. Not like today, where we have these feminists that, I don't want children. My body, my choice. Yeah, okay. In verse 37, she weeps over her virginity, which she could now never lose in marriage. She's not going to have a husband. He was not going to take her virginity. She was going to remain a virgin. She did not, however, weep because she was going to be a burnt offering. Yahweh would never allow or accept that. He is not a pagan God. He does not accept human sacrifice. They would lead you to believe that in these perverted versions of the Bible that she was going to be killed and burnt. Wrong. She and her companions, who she would also have to leave, went walking and weeping in the mountains, saying a long farewell between friends. In verse 39, it clearly states that she knew no man. This means sexually, no children, and a cause for her weeping. In verse 40, there is a glaring error in translation. the word they have translated as mourn, 8567, in your King James Bible and others, in fact means to recount or tell the story of. Mourn would mean the daughter was dead. See, they've changed the wording, making you think that she was killed as a sacrifice, which did not happen. Didn't happen. She was not killed and burned. Sacrifice. All the physical blood sacrifices pretty much were of the male gender. No Adamic sacrifice was ever done. Remember when Abraham was to sacrifice Isaac? It was only a test of his faith by Yahweh. A ram was substituted for Isaac, and no Adamic sacrifice occurred. All Yahweh wanted to do was see whether he would be willing and had enough faith to even sacrifice his only son. And he was. He was just ready to do that, and the angel said, harm not the boy. Don't touch him. Yahweh manifested himself as Yeshua, Messiah, to die as Israel's husband, so a remarriage could occur. Yeshua was more than a man. He was a man, but he was more than a man. And he took up his uncorrupted body again, thus defeating death itself, defeating death for us. No ordinary Adam was sacrificed. Yahweh sacrificed his own earthly manifestation, which was within his authority to do, to complete his grand plan for Israel's redemption by a kinsman redeemer. The translator's change of one word has twisted an entire view of a section of Scripture. The daughter was not sacrificed, no mourning occurred, just a yearly retelling of her story. So much for their lies. Let's get into chapter 12 here. We're a little more than halfway through the hour. Chapter 12, verse 1. This is about Yiftach defeating Ephraim. Verse 1. The men of Ephraim were summoned and went northward and said to Yiftach, on what account do you pass over to fight the children of Ammon and did not call us to go with you? We will burn your house upon you with fire. Verse 2. And Yiftach said to them, I and my people were men that strove, 7379, greatly, 3966, with the children of Ammon. And when I called out, 2199, to you, you did not deliver me from their hands. Verse 3. And when I saw that you did not deliver me, I put my life in my hands and passed over against the children of Ammon, and Yahweh gave them into my hands. For what reason have you come up to me this day to fight against me? Verse 4. Then Yiftach gathered together all the men of Gilead and fought with Ephraim, and the men of Gilead smote Ephraim, because they said, you Gileadi are fugitives, 6412, from Ephraim, among Ephraim, and among Manasseh. Oh yeah? They wouldn't help their fellow Israelites. And now they came up to attack their fellow Israelites, who had only done Yahweh's bidding. So now Yahweh was giving them into their hands to be punished. Verse 5. And the Gileadi seized the fords, 4, 5, 6, 9, of the Jordan before Ephraim. That's the Jordan River. And it was the crossing places where it was shallow enough to cross and wasn't rushing down in a rapid stream. And it was that those of Ephraim who were fugitives said, "Let me pass over." They wanted to go across the ford and get away from them. The men of Gilead said to him, "Are you an Ephrathi?" That means an Ephratite. Okay? From Ephraim. If he said, "Nay," then they said to him, "Say now, Shibboleth." That's 7641. That means a flowing stream. And he said, "Sibboleth, 5451. That means a flood. For he could not fashion 3559 to say it right. Even then they had difference in speech patterns, and they pronounced words differently among the tribes. They were separating, the tribes were separate in different territories, and they had their own local speech patterns. Like we do here in the United States, such a huge land mass, there are different cultures and different modes of living and speech patterns in our nation here. In Great Britain as well, you can always tell where somebody's from, usually if you know the accents. Then they took hold of him and slew him at the fords of the Jordan. And there fell at that time of Ephraim 42,000. Oh, bad, bad killings. Verse 7, and Yiftach led Israel 6 years. Then Yiftach the Gileadi died and was buried in a city of Gilead. And after him, Ibsan, 78, of Bethlehem, 103.5, it means the house of bread, led Israel. And here we go with judge number 10. Ibsan. Verse 9. And he had 30 sons and 30 daughters, whom he sent abroad, 2351, and brought 30 daughters from abroad for his sons. And he led Israel 7 years. Then Ibsan died and was buried at Bethlehem. Just a couple of verses for him. He didn't do evidently a great deal. Verse 11. And after him, Elon, that's E-Y-L-O-N, 356, a Zebuloni, a Zebulonite of the tribe of Zebulun, 2075, led Israel, and he led Israel 10 years. That was the 11th judge. Verse 12. And Elon the Zebuloni died and was buried in Ayalon, 357, in the land of Zebulun. Just a couple of verses for him. And here's the 12th judge. Verse 13. And after him, Abdon, 5658, the son of Hillel, 1985, a Pirathoni, 6553, led Israel. verse 14. And he had 40 sons and 30 grandsons. That's 1121 doubled, and it literally means sons of sons, which equals grandsons in our English. That rode on the 30 grandsons that rode on 70 ass colts, and he led Israel 8 years. Verse 15. And Abdon, the son of Hillel, the Pirathoni, died and was buried in Pirathon, 6552, in the land of Ephraim, in the hill of the Amaleki. That means the Amalekites. So that ends chapter 12. Now, tomorrow, we're going to do chapters 13 and 14. These chapters, some of them have been quite short, but we're going to be in some extended chapters with 13, 14, because we are going to get into the story of Shimshon, who is called Samson in your King James Bible. And that is incorrect, but we're not going to worry about that today. Today I want to talk about what went on in this chapter. These two chapters, actually. And discuss the method of mistranslation by the King James translators and others that continue to repeat over time the errors of the mistranslations, which twist the scriptures. And they keep repeating these, and people have been taught these things from birth. They've been doing it so long that they, you know, people believe that they're hearing the truth because it has become a tradition of error. This was done long ago. These mistranslations were put in place many years ago, and they are taught to the preachers when they go to seminary school to learn how to run their church business. They get a degree in business administration and stuff along with it, because the churches are a business and they have to know how to successfully run that business. And they are taught, depending on their denomination, the pet theories and mistranslations that are inherent in their particular denomination. Well, this is one of them. They have taught this and taught this, and this is pretty much universal within Judeo-Christianity, where they pass these errors along. And it harms the people that trust in them, but they feel that this is the one true church because their mama and daddy and their grandpa and grandma were part of this denomination. It's a family thing, and they don't really research or question what they are told on Sunday by the guy up in the pulpit. They're not raised to dare question. And that's a shame. I always tell people, if you do not believe what I'm saying to you, look it up for yourself. I challenge people to study. Get concordances and get research books and research everything that I say on the show. I want you to do that because, in my mind, the more that you study, the more you will know about the scripture and a better Christian you will be. And the more you know, the more you can teach to others. This is very important. Your children need to learn all these biblical truths so they don't go down the path that the older generations have gone down. They need to be taught so they are not raised in error, as a lot of us were. Myself included. I mean, oh man. Jesus is a Jew and he was king of the Jews. Well, no. Neither was he a Jew nor king of the Jews. He was of the tribe of Yehuda. And Yehuda, not Yehuda, Yehuda means Yah be praised. And the Yahudim are not Jews, they are those that praise Yah. Yah being the epithet for Yahweh. Yahweh be praised. That's what Leah named him that. Yehuda, Yah be praised. And they've twisted that and they've added a J onto it. Now it's pronounced Judah in the English, which is completely wrong. They have removed the holy name from the name of the man. They want to get Yah out of there. And then they have twisted that, twisting, into another word, and they have made the word Jew, which didn't exist till many centuries later, after the death of Yeshua Messiah. And they started inserting words. Jew, Gentile, heathen, born again. It's Judea or Judean or Judahite, if you want to anglicize it with a J. It's not Jew. No word Gentile, it's nation or nations, in the Hebrew and the Greek. Okay, no word heathen, that's nation. Same word. They've added all these things. They've manipulated the scriptures. A lot of it was done deliberately. I hate to say that. It was done to meet an agenda and is not Yahweh's agenda. They have removed the holy name of Yahweh and removed the holy name of Yeshua, and they have substituted a title for Yahweh, the Lord. The name is Yahweh. Elohim, which they translate as God, is a title. It is not the name. The holy name is Yahweh. And in the Hebrew, it is Yod, He, Waw, He, Y-H-W-H. the Tetragrammaton, the holy name, pronounced Yahweh, if you want to put vowels to it. They have come up with the name Jehovah by placing Masoretic vowel points from a margin note underneath these letters, and they come up with Yehoweh. So they come up with Jehovah. There is no name Jehovah. It was the margin note vowel points for Adonai put under the four-letter holy name, where they artificially manufactured Jehovah. Doesn't exist. Now we've got a whole church cult, Jehovah's Witnesses. Who's Jehovah? There is no Jehovah. It's Yahweh. The name is Yahweh. It's always been Yahweh. But they have changed it and twisted it and taught it as truth. Taught their twistings as doctrine. And a lot of these people did it in all good faith. They thought they were teaching the truth because they had been deceived. Therefore, they taught deception through ignorance. I don't hate them for it, but I will correct them. We need to teach our Israelite children the truth of these matters. Don't send them to a churchianity Sunday school and think you're raising them right. You're not. You have good intentions. I understand that. Same way people that call themselves Christians allow their children to dress up in demonic costumes and celebrate Halloween, perpetuating the myth of Christmas and Santa Claus and the Christmas tree. And it's just, you know, it's on and on and on. All these pagan holidays. Easter, the Easter bunnies. And all the fertility symbols. What can I say, you know? It is a comedy of errors, and I have really I bang my head against the wall. It's a never-ending battle against the established churches that are teaching all these errors. And it is also sponsored by the Jewish religion that has infiltrated the seminary schools, and they use it to promote their shopping days, their big boons. Let me read you from Jeremiah here, chapter 10, verse 3. For the prescribed customs of these people are worthless. For one cuts a tree from the forest. Work for the hands of a craftsman with a cutting tool. They adorn it with silver and gold. They fasten it with nails and hammers so that it does not topple. What does that describe to you, folks? That's a Christmas tree. Hello? What does it take? I mean, how can I wake you up? All this stuff is in the scriptures. So what's the purpose of the Christmas tree? It is a celebration of the ascension of the sun god Mithra. And originally, it's a fertility thing. Originally, in the old days, before electricity, they had two of those globular ornaments and a candle holder with a candle in the middle of that. Now, I don't mean to offend you, but that is a phallic symbol. And the presents were all underneath the tree, and you would bow down to pick up your present. Worshipping that tree, bow down in obeisance to the tree of Mithra, and it usually had a sunburst thing that looked like a star, a sunburst thing on the top. Oh, now they've substituted little glass angels and whatever, but the principle is the same. The tradition is the same. The symbology is the same. The symbolism. It is a pagan holiday. Then we have Ishtar Sunday, which they say is Easter. And Ishtar is Asherah and Ashtaroth. All three are the same goddess of fertility. She was the mother of Mithra, the sun god, and his consort. And a consort is a lover. She was not only his mother, but she was his lover, and she's a goddess of fertility. So they have all the Easter bunnies, and bunnies are very prolific sexually, and all the eggs colored as a symbol of fertility. It is a pagan day, and churchianity supports this. Christmas is a pagan day, and churchianity supports this. Come out from among them, my people, and be ye separate. I urge you, get out of these Judeo-Christian churches that teach this to your Israelite children. Do not follow their twisted version of Scripture, as I have shown you today. One more example. There is one Elohim, that is a divine being, and that is Yahweh, and none other, and only one Redeemer, and that is Yahshua. Anything else is a lie. Shalom Aleichem. I'll talk to you tomorrow.